Well, good morning, everybody. Give a wave if you can't hear when we're meeting together in church. And I always say that if you can't hear, give a wave and I'll show you where there's a pew up front, but that won't work today. It's good to be here with you and on this Thanksgiving Sunday. And if it's all right, I'd just like to take a moment to center myself as I do when I speak somewhere and in my practice. So if you just allow me to pray for a moment. Oh, beautiful Creator, who we call by many names and yet none can contain you. Help me to be a clear window through which your love, your light, and your wisdom, your courage, your risk can shine. Give thanks that we can be together in this way across the distances that are nothing for you. Amen. Well, I was thinking that sometimes it's hard to be thankful. And I immediately remembered a experience quite a few years ago now where I was sitting in the coffee shop here in Marathon, and a woman came and pulled out the seat in front of me and leaned in and said, "You're the minister, right?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And this always leads to an interesting conversation, though sometimes I feel made responsible for all the failures of Christianity throughout history in these conversations. But she said, "You know, I haven't been to church in 10 years. The last time was a Thanksgiving Sunday." Her name was Amelia, and she told me her story about being at church on a Thanksgiving morning when the minister was speaking about how wonderful it is and how we ought to be filled with gratitude, and pointed at all the things we should be grateful for, you know, fresh water running from our taps and food and warm homes and families and opportunities to be connected to one another and all these wonderful things. And Amelia said, "I got up right that moment and walked out and have not been back since." And I was finding it difficult to be thankful. Sometimes it's difficult to be thankful. Sometimes it's difficult to feel grateful. And it seems to me this year, 2020, is one of those years when it might be a little bit difficult for some of us to feel thankful. Here we are in the midst of a plague that has brought death and suffering around the planet, that has resulted in loneliness, isolation, fear, craziness about shopping for items that we think we're going to run out of. Everyone's got enough toilet paper, you know? I mean, it makes us kind of nuts. But it's not all. We're on the brink of what feels like civil war in the United States right now. That the two best people that they could come up with to run for president of the United States, the most powerful nation in the world, are those two. It's tough to be thankful. Civil rights movements, we realize, have nowhere near achieved the goals that were lifted up years and years ago. We're reminded not of the smug looking down south of the border and this racism that exists there, but the systemic racism that exists in our own country. And it makes it tough to be thankful. Some years it's hard. Some days it's hard to be thankful, to be grateful. Some of us who have not been really harmed by the plague or are glad that we live north of the border where we feel safer somehow, or to be in Northern Ontario where the pandemic has not reached us in the ways that it has in the busier parts of the world, join John Bradford, who famously said, "There, but for the grace of God, go I," as he watched prisoners being taken to the gallows. We imagine that somehow we're spared, probably not in this community, but many who say that everything happens for a reason. And I guess there's some reason that I get to a pass on the suffering that's going on. It's good to remember that in 1555, a few years later, after John Bradford said that, he was burned at the stake. I guess his grace ran out. Well, Matthew Fox, the ex-Catholic priest, now Episcopal priest, and the founder of the Creation Spirituality Movement, I'm sure some of you are familiar with him, the original Blessing Book and some of his others, outlines what he says are four paths, four ways of spirituality. And he does it in Latin. I don't know whether that's because of his training or just you sound smart when you say it in Latin, so I'll do my best. But he says there are four pathways in spirituality, the first being the via positiva. That is, that there are times when we experience union, beauty, love, when we fall in love, when we are in nature or enjoying a sunrise or a sunset, some moment of transcendence that we experience in our life and we feel filled with something beyond our understanding or knowledge. That's the via positiva. It's easy to be thankful on that path. There's a via creativa, music, art, the creation of some new relationship. That's easy as pumpkin pie to be thankful on those days. And the via transformativa, that is being part of some big change in society or witnessing at the fall of the Berlin Wall or marching with the Black Lives Matter and suddenly having our spirits lifted that something really important, something amazing might happen and we're a part of it. Greta Thunberg's speech to the United Nations. And suddenly there is a sense that there is something holy we're present to. And it's easy to be grateful in those moments. But there's also the via negativa. The times when we are in suffering. And that is also, according to Fox and to my own experience, a place in which we encounter holiness, where it's possible to know more deeply the transcendence and beauty of the universe and the miracle of life. We imagine that suffering in our culture is often, we perceive it as an aberration somehow. It's like, oh, I gotta, you know, get out of this so that I can start feeling close to mystery again. We imagine that somehow that is not part of life. But my experience is that suffering, humiliation, loss are as all natural as the local fresh food store. You know, it happens. It's part of us. It's organic to the human experience. And for me, what I know, my limited understanding of this path that seems to have chosen me is in a small way compared to the suffering of the world through a journey with cancer that has gone on for, 25 years now, I suppose. And thank you, Rob, for the showing everyone the book, a little commercial there. I don't need to talk about that. You can read it if you want. But I was thinking about a story that's in it from Thanksgiving in 2015. As I got ready to be with you this morning, I was in the hospital having had, I can't remember, seventh or eighth surgical procedure, and one of the more major surgeries. I always say that major surgery is any surgery done to me. Minor surgery happens to other people, but this did feel kind of major. And I was lying in bed in the hospital on Thanksgiving in 2015 with an incision that reached from my knee to my hip where they'd harvested skin from my forehead with the bone removed and titanium mesh implanted double vision because the muscles around my eye had to be removed. I was not suffering that too much because my face was so swollen and crusted with blood. It was horrible. And, you know, the painkillers were doing crazy things to me. And it was just, well, you know, here's the truth. I was just sitting there feeling sorry for myself, you know, but how life had dealt me a raw hand. This is how sorry for myself I was. I was jealous of Pearl, my beloved, my best friend Keith, and my mom, who'd gone across University Street in Toronto. I was in the General Hospital there to have Thanksgiving dinner at the Swiss Chalet. And I thought, lucky, I wish I could have had that great good fortune. Well, they came back and my mom and Keith headed off to home, and Pearl and I sat, and my dinner arrived, and I lifted the lid off. And it was this, I don't know, I think it might have been lasagna at one time, but it looked horrible. But the stunning thing was, I've been in the hospital a lot in Toronto particularly, and I know the routine. In the morning, you get orange juice, and at lunch and supper, you get apple juice. But when I looked at my tray, there was the predictable little white bun in the cellophane wrapper and a little cup of grape juice. Now, I'm a cradle Christian, and you cannot show me a bun and a little cup of grape juice without my mind going to communion. I said to Pearl, we can have communion. And I meant it as a joke, but I felt this well of emotion come up in me when I said it, that I was quite moved by. And while she went to get some water, I cleared dinner away, and I got a little Kleenex from the box by my bed, and I set the little bun and a little grape juice thing and peeled the tin foil lid back on the table. And she came, and when Pearl got back, we had communion together. We said what for us are ancient words, words that we have said since we were children. And I was just filled with this incredible gratitude for that love we share, but for all the times that I practiced that ritual for this moment, all the times that it didn't, maybe didn't even mean anything to me some of those times, but it made me ready for the time when I most needed to feel the presence of mystery, of the one love, of beauty in my body. And I was reminded of all the things for which I was grateful for: life itself, for the beauty of the tree that breathes, for the planet, for the night sky and the stars, for the people who are attending to my body, filled with gratitude and yet on the path of via negativa. It was Leonard Cohen who said, everything is cracked. That's how the light gets in. That's how we experience the beauty and the miracle, is in those moments of our frailty and brokenness. And the Apostle Paul, in the reading I asked Rob to read, reminds us that's also how the light gets out. Paul believes, as many people do, that within us is the divinity of all creation. We carry it in our bodies, but we carry it in a fragile pot. He says, we have this treasure in earthen vessels, and it's the fragility, the vulnerability, the weakness of that vessel that allows the light of the Creator out. And so on the path of the via negativa, we receive light. We're opened up to take it into ourselves, and we have the light come out of us to share with others. And so I've been thinking about this year, about how it has been hard to be thankful for many of us, and thinking about the things that I am grateful for, and perhaps you are too. I hear families talk about, yeah, we've been in isolation together, and we've never had this kind of time with our children before. You know, sure, we have people who are imagining a kind of hopefulness about a new way of being in the economy. We have people who are stepping up and noticing that we're giving the planet a risk, a rest from climate change, the shrinking of our carbon footprint as a result of all the things that are not happening. And we remember that COVID is reminding us that our borders are really an illusion. Like they're just imaginary lines we made up. When we say we're all in this together, I mean, we really are all in this together. And some people will suffer much more than us, and maybe that will wake us up to some new economy. I've been enjoying the economy. I call it the economy, the muffin economy. Maybe some of you are part of that, one of those. We have time at home, so we're baking bread and muffins and cookies and making soup, and we go around and we leave them on people's porches just to say, you're not alone. Yesterday, a group from our little congregation here in Marathon made little care packages for people they know who are suffering, you know, just some cookies and preserves and things like that, and dropped them off and said, we're thinking about you. And that we're grateful, and we want to express that gratitude when we're together in this way. Well, I don't know whether it's a year that's hard for you to be thankful or easy, but I know I'm leaving a little bit of time for Q&A. Apparently, Brenda said, make sure we like to check in with each other. And I love that. And I'll start with a question in case you want to respond to it. And it's just, where are you finding gratitude on this path that we're on as a planet right now? And you don't have to be stuck to that. If you want to ask me stuff,